XM Radio. Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile Tapeta training track, GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
It's excitement at every step.
Roses for Deborah just set a new track record.
On average, for the past decade, Pennsylvania paid over $28 million a year in breeders' awards, restricted races, and owner bonuses. Plus, PA Bred shine on the world's biggest stage. Just three states have bred more Breeders' Cup winners. Learn more at PABred.com.
The Remington Park Thoroughbred season is in the stretch run, heading to the final night of live racing on December 13th featuring the Springboard Mile. Racing starts at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Then on Friday, December 13th, the Springboard Mile will wrap up the season as two-year-olds compete for qualifying points to next year's Kentucky Derby. The first race is at 5 p.m. on Springboard Mile night, Friday, December 13th. The Remington Park Casino always features jackpot play. Visit RemingtonPark.com for group rates, suite rentals, and more. Let your heart race at Remington Park.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half, about 15 minutes into the second half, and Sean Clancy, part of the triumvirate, the three-headed monster, Clancy, Clancy, and Law, also available for all your legal and accounting needs.
Sounds perfect. Oh my!
We got so much to talk about with you, and the end of the jump season, and everybody gets a freshening, then of course there's one of our favorite December conversations every year: the annals of the Clancy family. Christmas trees and the tree, you know, for those of you that go out and get a tree like Tina and I do, we cut down our own tree And we drag it through the woods, onto a horse-drawn wagon. And then we, you know, then I mush the wagon with the horse through the snow.
Do you even take your tree down? You just slide in the closet, all ornamented up. You probably don't even take it down. Just slide it in the closet and slide it out. Right?
Yeah. You're going to find
keeping plastic industry alive. It's good.
Well, you're going to find yourself in the crosshairs here because there's a lot of people who respect the fact that we gave up on needles falling and fire hazard. We've got this fabulous tree that I actually got at a discount. And
no doubt.
It was a floor model at Home Depot. I've told this story. I've never told you this.
You're the chiefest of the chief.
I'm really not. I'm very generous, but it was just funny because with Tina and I, you know, Tina said, you know, I think I want to get, you know, a permanent tree. And
you stayed with her?
And I stayed, yes. you do understand, Sean, that I haven't necessarily had a lot of fiancés or girlfriends that grew up with Christmas trees.
Okay. I got you.
So I've had my share. Don't get me wrong. I've got a nice file of Shiksa girlfriends. We're at Home Depot, and here's what we see: this gorgeous tree, and it's marked down. And I said to the guy, I said, "How about this one?" He goes, "Well, that's a floor model. You'd have to take that one." I said, "It's a floor model." I said, "Well, what will you take for it?" And he said, "Well, it's already marked down." I said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Do you have a box for it?" Well, no. So in other words, you're going to have to take it apart here, and I'm going to have to, like, somehow. I said, no. I said, that price doesn't work. This was like a $350 tree, and I think they'd marked it down to like $279.95. And so the kid said,
disassemble, not
exactly,
not included.
So I said to the kid, and Tina is like looking at me with wide eyes. I said to the kid, you got to be able to do better than that. And he said, no. He said, I don't know. I said, go get your manager. I said, trust me. I said, you're going to do better than that. And sure enough, so the manager comes and the guy looks at me up and down. He said, all right. He said, I could take $100 off. So
wow.
we got it for like, I think, $175. And it was like basically half price. It's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Well, I feel about that, but that's right.
Well, but you wouldn't know that. I'm telling you, you're going to walk in the house when you come visit, and the smell of pine and spruce. Like
you've got the wintergreen spray, right?
We got the Renews It or whatever it is. Yeah, the Glade. We got the Glade Solid. And we got the candles.
That can't be good for you. That can't be good for you.
We got the poinsettia. The poinsettias are out and all that.
Are they fake too?
No, actually, we buy those.
They make plastic poinsettias. Beautiful, beautiful plastic red leaves. No.
You know what? All right, I'll go look for those.
You can probably get a deal on those at Home Depot too. Four models.
Well, at least when we took it home, it didn't fall off the truck, and we didn't have to go look for it on the side of the road. Why don't you tell everybody about your Christmas tree experience?
Okay, well, we've had several trees actually succeed, but the one that did not succeed was when my sister-in-law, I gave her the task to go pick up the tree. At the local nursery, a live tree, you know, with a proper, the ball on the bottom that you can plant later. And the nursery is about 30 minutes away. And she got here and she ran inside and said, "We have a problem." And I said, "Well, what's that?" And she goes, "I've lost the tree." I said, "What?" And she says, "The tree's not in, it's gone. It's not in the truck. I put it in the truck and I got here and it's not in the truck." So, of course, I stopped at what I was doing, trying to make a living, and we got in our truck, and we drove to find the tree. And if it was, if it's 10 miles, if the nursery's 10 miles away, we drove 9.85 miles, and there was the tree off the side of the road, kind of lying there in a heap. Burlap was kind of coming undone. It was dirt. It was... you know, it was like, you think Charlie Brown's Christmas tree was sad. This is the, this was sadder than Charlie Brown's tree. It was lying there in a heap. So we put, then I realized it was the first stop sign away from the nursery, and she drove, you know, she just floored it through the stop sign. And of course, she doesn't have a tailgate on her truck. And my lovely Greek family, who I adore, they can be stubborn. And I said, Stella, why don't you have a tailgate on your truck? And she said, why do I need a tailgate on my truck? Why would I need a tailgate on my truck? And I'm sitting there looking, and the tree is in the ditch, and, you know, thinking, like, right now, for this very reason. So anyway, it was a nice man. He was like reading the electric box or something. He happened to be standing there, and he looked at the tree, and he looked at me, and he looked at the truck. And he jumped in, and we picked the tree up and put it back in the truck, and brought it home, brought it inside, and it lasted probably 2 hours before the needles started falling off. And subsequently, by the time Christmas came around, it was Charlie Brown's Christmas tree with nothing but a few ornaments on, basically just a tree trunk and branches. So anyway, that was the Christmas tree story of, oh, it's probably been 5 years now anyway.
The famous trauma tree.
That didn't work out. So that one died, sadly. But, you know, I'm looking around. I've got some other ones out there that made it. So, you know, you can't hit 1,000% every time. You lose a few, you keep a few.
Well,
as opposed to yours, which never died. Yours will outlast anything.
It'll be handed down.
No global warming effect on your tree.
It's a family heirloom.
Yeah, you probably just slide it back in that closet and pull it out again, right?
As it happens, yes. She has a system now where it collapses and it goes into a pretty much. Although she didn't, you know, we had the kids here for Thanksgiving, and she didn't put the ornaments on because she, you know, the kids are 1, 3, and 5. So she.
Oh, that's the fun.
Yeah.
That's the fun of it.
Well, she waited till the kids left, and then she. We will, as always, as we do every year, there will be the photos of your tree and the photos of our tree, and we will let the public decide.
That's fine. We agree to disagree. How about that?
Well, explain to people how you, you know, the farm art, explain how you take these, not just recycle the tree, you actually plant them in the at the farm.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's what we've always tried to buy live trees and plant them later. And it's gotten a little more challenging. My son is his birthday is December 10th, so we try to get the tree up before that. And then it's a little hard to keep them going through Christmas. So I think I've kind of figured out that that has been the culprit of some of the trees not making it. But so we might have to go out and cut one down this year. That's what we've done the last few years. So we've changed it up a little. It was by the time you bring the live tree in and it dies and you drag it out, it's a lot of work for no gain. I hate to admit that to you, but you know, I have to be forthright on this program. So, and yes, there are times when I'm lugging around my tree and I'm thinking, man, Steve and Tina's tree, might come in handy right now.
Exactly.
But I would never go to the other side. That's like crossing the divide. So I'll stick it out with our trees. But it has crossed my mind that you got a point. That's all I'm going. That's as much as I will concede in the Christmas tree debate.
Well, what is the Christmas plan for Team Clancy?
It's typical Clancy's. We're still on the fence. We might go to Alabama to see Annie's family, or we might stay here and then maybe go to Alabama for New Year's. But we haven't made a decision yet. So we like to wait to the last minute. But either way, I think we'll be here in Virginia, which would be nice.
You split it up with Joe and your folks and...
Yeah, we usually go to the beach to see my parents. We did Thanksgiving with them, which was fun. Joey and Sam and his son Jack and his wife Amanda, and my sister's kids and my parents. We all went to the beach for Thanksgiving. So we'll probably go to the beach a few days after Christmas. That's what we usually do. Do a few days there, but it kind of depends on if we go to Alabama or not. Alabama's always been. We've usually go to Alabama. But we might change that up this year and stay here and maybe go there after Christmas. So we'll figure it out. Wow. But it's nice. We'll go see everybody. And I like, I enjoy it. It's fun. It's a nice time to kind of get a break and recalibrate a little and look forward.
Well, let's look back as part of the visit. And how about a recap of the season, of the jump season?
It was a good year. I mean, it was actually a very good year. We had a record purse. I think our purse went up over $7 million for the season, which is the most ever given away, which is great. Horses-wise, snap decision kind of, he finally had his, he had his day at Far Hills, so that was kind of fun to see that. He'll be champion for the first time, or should be champion for the first time. 3 for 5, made 337,000. So that was fun. It was fun to see him kind of get his big day at Far Hills. He's a little disappointing, I guess, in the Colonial Cup, finished third, ran well. But that was cool. Graham Waters won his third championship, I think third in the last 4 years. He dominated rider standings. And then Leslie Young, Jack Fisher, that went down to the last race. They ended up in a tie. Both had great years. That was kind of fun to watch. 29 winners apiece. Both of them went over $1 million in earnings. And that's a big mark in steeplechasing. So that was exciting. I thought it was a pretty good year, really. I mean, we lost some race meets in the fall because of firm ground. We lost Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Charleston, which was disappointing. I think they made the right decisions. We just had such a drought, and just in a lot of these courses, there's no way for irrigation at a lot, some of them. So that was disappointing. Hopefully, they'll bounce back. I mean, I just worry when those race meets take a year off if that isn't the sign where they won't come back. Hopefully, they both come back. We've had some winter meetings, looking forward to next year, a few new race meets, hopefully on the schedule next year. Sounds like Fair Hill might actually get back on the schedule, which would be amazing. We've really missed that race meet. That was kind of the traditional Memorial Day weekend race meet. Hopefully that'll be back. A few new point-to-points that are kind of adding some sanctioned races, which is cool. It's good. I mean, steeplechasing's, we had a really good year as far as purses go and participation. And, losing the race meets is we lost Queen's Cup, Tryon. Hopefully love to see them come back. And that's always the tricky part, really, just, the pressure on some of these race meets, but we had great support from Colonial Downs, great support from Naira. Hopefully that all comes around again next year. And, we're looking forward to it. I mean, the beauty of steeplechasing in America is you have a downtime. We get the winter off, and you're excited for it to start, and you're kind of excited for it to finish. It's a long, hard year. You're kind of traveling, horse, you're going around, and it's actually nice to get a break, like the old days of flat racing, where you could take a break in the winter. So we'll enjoy that for sure.
And it's true, we have enough. Have enough experience, or certainly have enough conversation about, that's one thing that's happened in the last, I don't know, 30 plus years that, you know, probably was to the detriment of the overall product of that the game offers, you know, which was the year round, you know, schedules. And frankly, let's be honest, the, you know, the state governments that essentially invited more racing and, you know, were eager for more tax revenue and made it easy for circuits and, you know, associations to add to their schedule. You know, at the time, you know, people thought, well, you know, why not? It's more, you know, it's more is better. Well, maybe more really hasn't been better.
Yeah, no, I think year-round racing is something that, I mean, I think it's really hurt our game in a way. Just, you know, and along with other factors. I mean, we've got the fall crops cut in half, and we're trying to go year-round. And I mean, I think these horses, they need a break, and I like to give horses a break, like to give them breaks in the winter and come back in the spring, like the old school kind of way of doing it. So I don't know. It seems like the horses are running less, but they're staying in training more rather than, you know, years past, you know, back in the day, they used to run hard and then get a big break in the winter and come back. Those days are long gone, sadly. I don't think, obviously, that won't happen again. But, you know, and I think Europe's done it the same way. Europe used to have, you know, used to have a jump season in the winter and flat season spring, summer, into the fall, and now they've got summer jumping, they've got year-round racing, and they're, you know, they're kind of suffering from the same thing. The product's going down and become a little bit of a betting fodder type thing. So the horses certainly were benefited from the break, and I think it's harder on them now. They just try to stay in year-round training stuff on them.
Speaking of which, what's your, I heard a couple of, you know, dissenting opinions about the July 4th week of cards at Saratoga in advance of the meet. You have any reaction to the people's reactions or?
Yeah, I mean, look, I just, you know, I obviously love Saratoga, and just, I mean, we are risking having too much Saratoga. I understand it certainly now, because I understand where they're coming from. I understand Irish decisions. But I'm old school and kind of worry that you're going to just, you know, have just dumb the product down to such a degree that it doesn't, we've already suffered from that to some degree. It doesn't, you know, the cards aren't as strong, and that's for a variety of reasons, but it worries me when they just keep having more and more racing at Saratoga, because you just run the risk of where it's not, you know, it's not as special as it once was. And, you know, back to year-round racing, and the last thing you want to do is have too much racing. Yeah, too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. So it worries me. I get concerned that they're just keep adding days, and, you know, the quality goes down, and the urgency to walk over there and go to the races or come to the races is changes so much. I mean, we've seen that just in our own experience over the last, whatever, 10, 20 years, and there was a time when you couldn't miss a card at Saratoga. I mean, they were so good, and you wanted to go over there, and it was short, and you had that urgency every day, which you don't, you know, you just don't have every day now, which it worries me for sure.
Well, in this particular, the way that this calendar happened to fall, it just made perfect sense, really. I you know, to have those, you know, that weekend, you know, rather than run it at Aqueduct to no great fanfare, you know.
No, I agree 100% on that. I mean, I think I understand why they did it. I understand looking at the calendar, looking, you know, without having Belmont and everything else. But, you know, you just want to be careful that you don't, if this, you know, they if this becomes, I mean, I could see where they would try to be you know, the law, you be in Saratoga for you know, the whole summer, and so, and that just worries me. I just get concerned that you'll just it'll lose its luster and lose its appeal, and the pounding the turf courses take. I think that's a factor that worries me. So I don't know. I mean, I totally understand where they're coming from, and certainly in today's climate, without having Belmont and the calendar the way it falls this year, I understand it, but just worries me having too much racing up there.
I do have to ask you, in addition, it occurs to me, given, you know, that you rode races professionally, and you can address jockey antics and jockeys' missteps, your view of the Paco Lopez
I was watching the race live. I saw it happen live as it was galloping out. I knew there was going to be a firestorm coming. I'm sorry it happened. I'm sorry that, you know, I don't take any, like, I think it's all a sad situation. I mean, the horse was obviously difficult to ride. He's hanging on the outside fence. He looked at the winter, looked at the paddock chute, almost duck out there. It was scary, dangerous, everything else. And I can excuse a jockey's move in a race where, you know, in the split second timing that you have to do something, but that was just pure, it was just anger and just, you know, just frustration and anger and taking it out like that was, That was just way too far. Again, I'm sorry it happened. I understand it. There's nothing like riding a race where your life's on the line and you're, you know, they're making split second decisions, and there's moments when, your temper will get the better of you. But that situation, you know, that was just, you know, we're seeing basically come to us, you know, pulling up and just completely frustrated and just mad. And I understand it. I don't excuse it. And I'm mostly just sorry it happened. And I'm sure Paco feels the same way. I'm sorry. I'm sure he's sorry he did it. But that's just pure frustration, anger, fear, all wrapped up in the heat of the moment. It's not good enough. I mean, you can't excuse it and you can't let it go.
I don't get the portion. He won the race. Does he think he's teaching, you know, the horse
Pure temper. I mean, that's all. That was just temper. He's in a moment, you know, he's hanging on the outside fence. He's scared, fear, obviously thinking the horse might go over the outside fence, which he looked like he might. There wasn't, I mean, it wasn't rational thought. It was just an irrational moment of temper is the way I look at it. He just mad.
Well, this one, I mean, with all the various incidents that he's been involved in, putting other horses and other riders in harm's way, potentially. I mean, he almost killed Romero Marat. This one really seems to have galvanized public opinion, including from trainers and owners that have, you know, publicly declared that they will not ride him again, if and when he's available to take calls, because basically anybody that rides him is condoning his behavior. And I talked to some people off air yesterday, Sean, that said they they blame or they include in responsibility for this countless steward stands that have let him, you know, misbehave in various ways for decades, for 25 years. That he should have been pulled up a long time ago and read riot acts and potentially even been, you know, driven from the game. He's it's amazing, actually, that we have to deal with this after the countless incidents that he's been involved in.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, it's up to the stewards to, I mean, I think a lot of the problems we wind up having is because the problems were allowed to go on and go on and go on and get out of hand. Every jockster knows, and every jockey colony knows there are dirty riders and there are clean riders, and the dirty riders are allowed to get away with it to a point where it becomes, you have to almost ride dirty to counterbalance the dirty riders instead of the stewards dealing with it and putting an end to it at the beginning. I think a lot of times it does get out of hand, and we know who those riders were or are. We know who they were. I know from my years of riding, there were a couple guys in the jocks who were just dirty riders, and it forced you to ride dirty against them, which was, you know, basically doubling the unsafe part of the sport. And, you really wanted the stewards to do something about it. They need to do it right from the beginning and stop it from the beginning. And a lot of times they let it go. And I mean, I think New York's got it. I think it's gotten far too aggressive up there. I watch it happen day after day. Used to be when a guy would bump you, you know, you'd steer away from him. And now it's like they almost steer into each other because you're forced to ride that at that level of, it's almost like it's like offensive to be, it's like, you know, offensive to be defensive. You have to be defensive. You have to be offensive. And that's
interesting.
I think it's a terrible precedent to set. Yep. And it's terrible for the horse. You watch these poor horses getting, you know, obviously at the end of the races, they're bouncing off each other. And it's really unsafe for a horse. It's unsafe for the jockeys, obviously. And yeah, it's an ongoing course of conduct that the stewards, some stewards allow it to happen and allow it to go on far too long. And I think it needs to be cleaned up and fixed right from the beginning. And that's it. But you can ask any rider in any colony, there's race riding and then there's dirty riding, and there's a very, very big difference. And a good race rider is brilliant, and a dirty race rider is deplorable, and it needs to be corrected at the beginning. You can't allow it to keep going.
Yeah. Well, those opportunities came and went repeatedly, and you know, this really at the same time, it's also a fairly good opportunity, it seems, for HISA to, you know, exert their authority and you know, step in where other potential authorities failed to over the years.
Yeah, you hope so. I mean, I think anybody in the game, when you're talking about this stuff, it's about the habitual
yes.
offenders/cheaters, and that's where we have to be very careful of I mean, I see people, you know, you make an innocent mistake or a miscalculation or just a miscue, and you get really penalized by that, and then we watch the habitual cheaters just get the same fine, same inning. It never changes. It doesn't change their behavior, and it keeps going. And the first thing I think anybody in the sport would like to see is to clean up the habitual offenders/cheaters, and that's where you'd start there, and then work your way down. And we know who the habitual offenders are as jockeys, and we know a lot of the habitual offenders as trainers, but they just pile up these infractions and medication violations, and that's if you had one wish, that's what I would like to see, where the habitual offenders/cheaters are are penalized to the point where it makes a difference.
Now, we're going to talk at Arizona. We'll have Lisa Lazarus to. I want to hear the what kind of a program they're going to either institute employ starting with this provisional suspension, and we'll go from there. Sean, congratulations on a terrific season for River D. I know you're always trying to do more and better, but profile of River D grows every year, and you're one of the great, absolute great ambassadors that the game has, and then of course fold in that's on the racing side, and then you fold in what you and Joe and Tom what the impact you've had with thisishorseracing.com and the Saratoga Special. So thanks for everything, and a great year of visits as well again on the show, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much, and thanks to your great ambassadors too. I've said it before, it's what you do for our game is important. It's brilliant. We appreciate all the support and all the dialogue and all the coverage for sure.
The proper coverage?
The proper coverage. Yeah, I was trying to get through the whole thing last night. Now you made me say it. I almost said you got to have a proper Christmas tree. I almost said you need a proper suspension for these guys. Is it a proper aluminum tree? A proper wintergreen spray? And I kept staying away from it. And he dragged me down. He dragged me down to the bottom. You gotta have a proper Christmas, Steve.
Sean Clancy, everybody. The best. Thanks, Jono. So much fun. Unbelievable. Just an absolute pleasure. The it's occurring to me that, a lot of these conversations in some cases will be the last one until after the first of the year. That sort of popped in my head because we've got 2 weeks left, and I'll probably get Clancy Sr. Sean is known as the Wee Clancy. Or the proper Clancy, and Joe's the proper big brother, and Tom Law the last 2 weeks. Actually, Law will probably turn up at Arizona, so we'll probably have Law live next week, and then Joe to close things out. But let's get Dave Hill in, and looking forward to Dave. We'll see if he's got some answers. Of course, he just last week, of course, was home for Thanksgiving. He loaded up the Hill family truckster and schlepped those kids all the way to Hot Springs and back.
I did it.
Is this officially the last time you're going to do it, though?
God, I hope so.
Well, how long? When did you guys come to New York? When did you first move to New York?
I've been living in New York since 1999.
All right, so this is basically the same time as I've been here, more or less, 25 years. And how many times?
Yeah. We got married in 2009, and my dog is upset.
Waffles!
Yeah, Waffles. She's mad because we didn't take her to Arkansas. I think she knows I'm talking about it. We started having kids and got married in 2009. And, when I married my wife, she told me there was no way she was ever going to spend Christmas in Arkansas, so we could just forget about that. And so we sort of set up from the beginning that we'd go to Arkansas for Thanksgiving. We'd stay here for Christmas. We've been doing that ever since, but we just kept having kids, man. And it just gets more and more expensive. The more kids we have, it's an $800 plane ticket at Thanksgiving. There's not a lot of flights, New York, Little Rock. So, it gets pretty expensive. So we've been driving. It sucks.
Well, once you arrived, how was Thanksgiving?
It was all right. You know, it's not the Thanksgivings of my youth. I'll tell you that. And this, I think maybe a lot of people I talk to that are around my age are experiencing something similar. I mean, you grew up in a small town. When I was a kid, we had big family holidays because all the family lived there. But, you know, my generation, everybody kind of left and moved.
Yeah.
And started families in other places. And so it feels like a lot of my cousins and a lot of my family, they'll celebrate together, you know, in different places around the country rather than everybody getting together and having one big one. My wife's family, they're all in the New York area. You know, they don't go very far. New York has a strong gravitational pull, so they're all pretty close, and they still have these big holidays. But down in Arkansas, not so much.
Well, it's kind of downcast. I'll be honest.
It's fine. I mean, I enjoy it. Look, there's less pressure. You know, it's like a smaller gathering means, you know, there's a lot less pressure and a lot less hecticness that goes on. It's a little more intimate, and I enjoy it. And you know, I ran in the turkey trot, and I did pretty good. So, all in all, I'd say it was a decent trip back down there, but. I'm sure not ready to do that drive again.
Well, you know, there was a long run before you became a regular. You were a regular visitor when the Oaklawn season would kick off. I would reach for you, and season kicks off tomorrow.
Yep.
This whole December meet is now, you know, kickoff to the season is now, you know, pretty well established. This has got to be, I don't know, fourth year maybe.
Yeah,
fourth or fifth.
Yeah, it starts earlier and ends later now. It's a longer meet than ever before, and I'm still not used to it. You know what I mean? Every time I'm talking to folks back home, and they say, "Oh yeah, we're getting our tickets to go to the races next week," and I'm like, "What? Why are we racing in December?" I'll never get used to that or May racing, but you know, it's cool that they're doing it. I'm glad to hear Oklahoma is successful enough that they can extend the meet. You know, people in Arkansas they still love going to races.
It is. It's a, you know, much like here. And of course both are, you know, both towns have that spa heritage, in common. It's something to look forward to, and you know, everybody, you know, the place is always full. It's a knowledgeable fan base and horse player base, you know, top horsemen. It's been good for, you know, the Arkansas breeding program is on the come. There's just so many things about it. And in fact, I had Jason Milligan as a kind of a meet kickoff, and he reminded me that Mr. Sella is the keynote next week at the University of Arizona Symposium.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and what the Sellas have done, you know, at one of the families, you know, there's only a handful left families that, you know, that run racetracks and you know, are – you know, part of fixtures, essentially, that have provided great stability.
Well, literally and figuratively, I mean, they have their house right on the racetrack there.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
They literally live on the track. I always liked the statue of, I guess it was Sellis's dog, that there was a statue of his old dog that sits there overlooking the racetrack from their yard. And I had suggested that to the guys at Old Smoke, that they should make a t-shirt with that dog statue. I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure if it's been embraced as a symbol of Oaklawn yet, but you know, the way the goose has, but I think it would be a good one.
It would be a good one. That's pretty much the only logo that I can even think about with Oaklawn are the four suits, right? The diamonds, hearts, spades, and clubs. It was part of their logo forever. But there really isn't. Yeah, there. I guess sometimes they've used that The cupola from the infield as an image, or
yeah, that's true, or the red and white finish line pole.
Yeah, but that's right. That's right. They need something. They need. Yeah, it's a good idea. You've hit on a fun. You know what to me is iconic, and I only hit on it accidentally in a photograph. I took a picture from up the past the wire. Either last year, before, I think, and with that good filly of Lucas's 2 years ago, and it must have been in the Honeybee, and the Sky Tower up on the lookout there, that Space Needle,
the Hot Springs Mountain Tower,
yeah. That kind of looms over, right? That's got kind of an iconic imagery.
Sure, the city has used that as a bit of a as a sort of a symbol for in the past as well, too. It's an interesting, it's a symbol. To me, it symbolizes like those days in the 70s when Hot Springs was really trying to be something other than a gambling town, and they decided they have like amusement parks and tourist attractions and things like that. So they built that tower for tourists. I'm not sure it ever really took off, but it's still there. You can still go up in it and look out over the city. But yeah, it's sort of striking. It does sort of stand out there. And, I think similarly, I thought you were talking about was the Royal Vista Hotel across the street from the racetrack, which is a big towering kind of, hotel, tower that's, you could see from, when you're standing in front of the track, it's sort of right down Central Avenue. It's an interesting part of the skyline too. Now it's covered in scaffolding though.
Looking forward to getting back. It's always fun to see what this constant, renovation and improvement. In fact, I was talking about you earlier when I had Jason on, because they've added all these overnight stakes and they've named them after all kinds of things, including the Majestic. And I told everybody about the Majestic and mm-hmm. what it would mean, and the reference to, the former Grand Hotel. But there were a couple that were kind of obscure. That I have to either look up, or I said maybe you would know. La Pétorelle.
Hmm.
It mean anything?
No, I'm not sure I know what that is.
No, I'll have to look it up. But the American Pharaoh, obviously, the Eclipse, Southern Hospitality, I guess is just that.
Well, that was the name of a horse, wasn't it? Or...
I don't know. So, maybe. That'd be a good name if it wasn't. But then, the Valley, they got the Valley of the Vapors that they instituted mm-hmm. a couple of years ago. Bathhouse Row, a couple of years old now. The Dig a Diamond. How about, did you see that story about the kid that, I think it was a tourist that dug up a gigantic diamond?
Sure. There's one every year.
It's unbelievable.
It's such a cool thing, the Crater Diamond State Park. And every single year, somebody finds some big old diamond out there. It's such a cool thing. It's a it's a state park full of diamonds. You just go out there and dig around and find one. It's pretty incredible.
And it's not it's not like they're planting them. It's or like that ball where there's a diamond in the ice cube.
Yeah, that's right. No, this is these are real diamonds that you can go and find in a state park. And if you find it, you keep it.
I'll dig it up for those. It's about 6 months ago, probably at the end, maybe midsummer. I found a very valuable, big, crazy, crazy story. Let's find some diamonds in week 14, David. Those two beats, I don't want to put put a kibosh on, but. It feels like that Raider and Viking, those brutal beats 2 weeks ago, I hope they didn't sour the season here.
It was terrible. We were going to have a perfect day. And, I had a good parlay on all those five picks that week, too, and I really felt good about it. And those were both really tough beats. I'd rather just not be in it at all. than to lose that way. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad we didn't have a show last week, and I hope nobody looked at my picks, because then I just got completely slaughtered over the Thanksgiving weekend. Just couldn't win one. And really, again, like only one of them, that Tennessee was the one pick I had where it just was way off. Like they were never in it. They were never going to cover that number. They looked so much worse than I think we had thought they would. But every other team really had an opportunity to cover the number and just choked at the end. So I had to it made it so much more emotionally painful that I had to watch all these fourth quarters and watch these leads evaporate, or, you know what I mean? And just watch these teams choke up and not cover and lose all these bets. So last week was really nightmarish. So got to get right this week.
All right. Well, don't know if there's a play tonight, but it's certainly an entertaining game lined up. Packers are in Detroit tonight.
Yeah, I know. I do have a play this week. I am going to play Detroit. And, you know, both these teams played each other, or no, both these teams played on Thanksgiving won their games. Detroit didn't cover, and I played Detroit played them on Thanksgiving. I laid 10 points, and they didn't cover. They should have covered. They shut them out in the first half, and they, you know, were up by 21, I think, at the end of the third quarter, and then just let the Bears, you know, score all over them in the fourth quarter, and, you know, got really lucky there to win the game. I wish they would have lost the game, because if they weren't going to cover anyway, and if they lost, we'd probably have a better price on them here. We probably would have had a better price against the Bears later on. So, you know, it was just bad all around. They're laying 3.5 tonight, and I like that number. I got a good price. I got a plus 104 on laying 3.5. And, you know, I just think that this is a great number. There's a lot of money coming in on the Packers. There's a lot of interest in the Packers. I guess people think that Detroit's just lost too many players on defense. They're too banged up on defense, and that this is a good spot for the Packers. I think that Detroit's defense was already banged up, and still they played three great quarters against Chicago. I don't know what to say about the fourth quarter in that last game, but, you know, the Lions just controlled the ball the whole game. They were just so dominant. The final score, I really don't think, showcases just how much on the in the box score and in the stat sheet Detroit just dominated. And, you know, the Packers have a lot of injuries this week, too. They don't have Romeo Doubs. They're facing a pretty long injury list as well. So both these teams are banged up. They both play pretty similar schedules the last 3 weeks. They both played on Thanksgiving. Detroit's just the best team right now in the NFL. They're the favorites to win the Super Bowl. It's just hard for me to see this game in primetime being a game that they can't cover what I think is a relatively short number against an inferior team.
Fair enough. 3.5 Detroit tonight on Prime. I'm looking forward to this, actually. Let's get into Sunday. Cool. Yeah.
Well, on Sunday, I'm betting on the Jets again. And I.
Wow.
They should have covered last week. Last week I bet them plus one. They closed as favorites. They caught a lot of money last week. You know, they were a pick six away from covering this thing. And also some missed kicks away from covering, too, if you look at it that way. I mean, they've had real bad problems with kicking. And that was a tough one to watch the end of that game, where it looked like they might be able to cover it for me and save some of my day. I think that this is the lowest the Jets have been in market all season. Plus 6.5 is what I've got. The number might be 6 at a lot of shops now, because there is Jets money coming in at 6.5 that maybe took some of those off the board. 6.5 is as bad a number as this is as low as you've found the market. We've talked about this in past weeks. You know, I try to find teams and buy them low and sell them high. And I just think this is one of those spots where the opinion of the Jets has sunk to the point where they're getting 6.5 points in a game where I think the look ahead on this game was something much tighter, maybe 3 or 4. So I think it's a good spot to play the Jets on the road, getting 6.5. And the good news is because we're not laying a number with the Jets this week, I don't have to worry about them choking and giving up a lead. We just need them to keep it close. So I much prefer to take points with the Jets than to lay points with the Jets. That's for sure.
All right. All right.
I know. It sounds crazy that I'm going to continue to play this.
That's trash team.
But the numbers are the numbers, man. And the power rating on the Jets says that they're better than the 6.5-point dog here. Let's see. The Vikings and Falcons game. I think that Kirk Cousins is hurt. I think that he looked really bad last week. I almost played the Falcons last week. I'm glad I didn't. They ended up not covering. That felt like a win for me because I was very close to pulling the trigger on betting them, and I'm glad I didn't. They did not look good. It's, even though the score in that game was close, the Cousins just doesn't have any zip on the ball. He just does. It seems like he might be more hurt than they're letting on. You know, Minnesota just seems like a much better team than the Falcons right now. And this is just, I think this is a number that the Vikings can overcome. I think the Falcons are a team that's being held together by paperclips here. So I'm laying, what did I get? I'm laying 5.5.
5.5?
And yeah, that seems like it's still pretty widely available. What else is on the board? I've got some action on the Eagles. And so this is a big number, and this is a buyer beware kind of play. I'm backing the Eagles here against the Panthers. I am laying 12.5. There's been some money. There's some 13s now in the, I think there's been a lot of money coming in on the Eagles at 12.5. So the number's 13 in some places. But I'm laying 12.5 here against the Panthers. Look, I think that the Eagles are fully capable of covering this number. The problem is that they kind of haven't done so good. They're 7-3 against the spread this season. But of those three games where they didn't cover the spread, two of them were games where they were more than a touchdown favorites. So they have had a hard time this season covering these big numbers. And that's the one thing that gives me a little bit of pause about having to lay this big a number. But by the power ratings, they should be able to, you know, to win by this kind of margin against Carolina. So I'm playing them, but it's a little bit buyer beware because they have this season upset their backers when they had to win by margin twice anyway. They did cover, I think they did cover one big game. No, they didn't. They've lost. They were more than a touchdown favorites twice this season, and they didn't cover either one of them. So let's make this the first one. I mean, it's a big win off. Beating the Ravens by 5 points was a huge win for them. And they've only lost one game to the Bucks. It feels like it was ages ago. I mean, I can remember that game. You know, it just feels like when was the last time we saw the Eagles lose? You know, they look good, and Carolina looks bad. So I'm going to hope that they romp. The one cool thing that might help us out, and this is a little bit qualitative handicapping here, but, you know, Saquon Barkley is now a real consideration for the MVP.
Right.
And, you know, this is sort of a late season move for people to be looking at him as the MVP, and it would be really cool for him to win it. They don't have there aren't going to be many more opportunities for Saquon to make his case like there are this week against a really bad run defense. So, you know, I could see them feeding him the ball and letting him get in the end zone as much as possible so he can make his case to MVP voters. And again, that's a qualitative handicap, but, you know, it's just yet another thing to make me feel good about betting the Eagles this week, I guess, and with this kind of margin.
Interesting, because, you know, Bryce Young has been coming on, obviously, and, you know, the way this Vic Fangio defense plays, I mean, it's a fascinating it's been a very interesting season for this team that has gotten better week after week after week, you know, bought into that system of his, and they, you know, they basically, it's like every game is like a boxing match. They take the first couple of rounds, and, you know, they let the other team, you know, take a couple of shots, and
yeah,
some cases they fall.
Yeah,
behind.
We saw this last season too, where the Eagles had a lot of games last season where they were coming from behind. You know, they had to come from behind because they were just, it took them a couple of quarters to get it going. But yeah, this is a defense that really harasses quarterbacks, and they have a good pass rush. And, you know, that's sort of one of these, that means that teams are going to either, you know, when you play a lot of blitz and you have a pretty effective rush, you know, this is a game where a quarterback could get some real big explosive plays off of a defense like that, or could just completely be befuddled by it. And I think that this is going to be a game where the Eagles are going to really befuddle the Panthers. So we'll see.
Right.
I got some more plays on Sunday. I've got the 49ers. I'm playing the 49ers against the Bears. There's a lot of the Bears are catching a lot of money. I've got the Niners here -4. Or no, I've got a -3.5. There's -4s across the market now. But that number has really been bouncing around. I think the Bears have, I'm not sure what the original line was, but I think the Bears have taken money here. They're sort of a wise guy pick here. I just don't buy it. I think it's true that Brock Purdy doesn't look 100%, and it is true that the Niners are dealing with a lot of injuries, and they got destroyed in a weather game against Buffalo, who's also one of the best teams in the NFL. But the Niners are still a top 10 team here, and the Bears are a bottom 10 team, and 3.5 seems like a pretty short number. I think that it's easy to back the Niners here at home against Chicago. The one thing I will say about Chicago is that, you know, they fired their head coach because of this bungled, end of game against Detroit, where they had an opportunity to win and they just completely blew it, not calling a timeout. And the coach got fired there. You know, my read of that situation was that it wasn't the coach's fault. He wanted to hold the timeout, and I don't blame him. He wanted his team to get one more playoff before calling the timeout, and his players and his quarterback couldn't get it together. So I feel like he's a terrible coach. They should have fired him anyway, but I don't think that this was, firing him over this particular episode. I think this episode said a lot more about Caleb Williams' inexperience, the Chicago Bears offense's ineptitude, than it did about head coaches, inability to call timeouts at the right time, because I don't think they should have called a timeout there. They didn't need to. They only needed to because the quarterback, lost his mind. So I think that this quarterback is not very good, and I think that this will be a good test for the Bears to play against the Niners defense, banged up though they may be. So again, I like the Niners here. I laid off. I didn't play the Niners 2 weeks ago when I was telling you guys that I thought we should play him if Purdy was in the game. He ended up not being in the game. I didn't play him. They lost. This past week, I didn't have a bet on the game, but Purdy was back in. He didn't look 100%. Let's hope that this week, he's got some oomph in that arm a little bit. But I think that this is a team that can win even without it. And, there are injury concerns this time of year, but we just kind of have to hope that they balance out on both sides. So by the power ratings, I'm taking 49ers -3.5. And then the last bet that I made, I think the last one I have is I've got Cincinnati on Monday night on the road as road favorites against the Cowboys. The Bengals are laying 5.5 points. That's the number I got. You can still get that number. I just think the Cowboys are bad. And I think that, even with Parsons back on defense, I just think that the Bengals offense is really, really good. They've lost a lot of games where it's just games that were heartbreakers where they put up tons of yards and really did their job on offense, couldn't get it done on defense, and lost the games. I think that, this will be a game where the defense can probably do a better job against the Dallas Cowboys quarterback that doesn't seem to really have his sea legs yet here. And so I like the Bengals as road favorites on Monday Night Football, laying 5.5.
So pretty much, the only dog you're taking is the Jets.
The Jets, it's all favorites except for the Jets this week, and sometimes it just works out that way. This is how the power ratings kind of shake out, and they didn't do so well last week. But like I've said before, if I live by Massey Peabody, I'm going to die by it. And last week I died, but I think that this is a good look. The power rings supposedly get better as the season goes on. We're getting to the end of the season. These next few weeks are going to be kind of crucial. Maybe I get creamed this week. Maybe people want to fade me, but I feel like this might be a good spot to take advantage of some market misperceptions, some overreactions in the market, sure, to injuries that I think maybe won't make that much of a difference in the way that an overall team plays. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. Really, outside of the quarterback, a lot of these injuries don't mean much. Quarterbacks, offensive linemen, those are important injuries to watch. But sometimes I think the market overreacts to these injuries, and the line will move way too much. And that's what we're trying to take advantage of here, is buying teams low and selling them high.
Dave Hill, 77, everybody. And if you haven't signed up at Unabated, use the code HILL Hill and get a free trial. And of course, access hockey, football, basketball, everything's in full swing right now. Good time to wade into all the tools at Unabated. And Dave, good luck. We'll talk next week.
Thanks. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you then.
Dave Hill, come to him from Arkansas next week. Not Arkansas, Oklahoma. Jeff Franklin. And I've been looking forward to this all morning. I am anxious to see what Crafty's going to do here in the, got about 10 minutes. And I want to see what Jeff is going to do in the cigar mile. You've got your sheets in front of you. Jeff has been analyzing them for a day or so, and he joins us now. Jeff?
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was splendid. I've got some friends who have a beautiful home up in the foothills here, right above Santa Anita Racetrack, and the weather was splendid, and we had like 25 of us
who stuck
their faces. Yeah, it was great. By the way, the best stuffing I ever had. Oh, my gosh. We were talking about stuffing last week. Oh, Sue just nailed it. Oh, my gosh. So it was a great day. Thank you.
Outstanding.
Thank you. But I have to say, Dave Hill just ruined my holiday. I mean, two of my best bets of this week. I'm a very amateurish football handicapper. He's fading the other way, so I think I'm going to stand down this weekend. He knows a lot more than I do.
All right. So. Everybody's got their own approach, and that also includes sheet reading. And I don't even want to recap anything. I want to go right into the cigar mile. Jeff, what a terrific running this is, and there are a lot of considerations.
Boy, no kidding. And what a great reminder. I really hope guys will go to Thorograph.com, click on that banner. All you got to do is enter your email, and you'll get the two races, or in some cases three races, that Steve and I go over every Thursday. Because a race like this, what a great introduction to the sheets, and how tantalizing a race. It's compliments to Naira to put up just a kick-ass race with all sorts of possibilities. The storyline of the race is that there are five horses who have produced negative numbers. For guys that are new to Thorograph, the lower the number, the better. When you get into negative numbers, you're talking about elite territory. So we're talking about five horses who have actually walked this walk and are grade one caliber horses at this wonderful bring them all together distance of a mile. So that's part of it. Plus you get a couple of emerging horses like Locked, who are knocking on the door to do something like that. So I just love the race. I mean, I don't even really know where to start. It's such a great race. Do you want to take the mic?
I talked about it to start the show, actually, and kind of went through and gave a bit of a hint just about, you know, the four favorites that are also, you know, the fastest coming in, with David's morning line really reflecting that. Post time, of course, and Mulliken, you know, being the most obvious. Then you look at Bookham Dano, who would absolutely have to run a career best, it seems, you know, to beat either Mulliken or Post Time. Then there's the turn back aspect of Senior Buscador, who's got that slew of you know, negative twos that he ran last year that started actually around this time with his try in last year's Cigar Mile. So you're dealing with that, and then you've got, as you mentioned, a couple of horses or some horses to consider at decent prices and even big prices. Law Professor is 15-1 and absolutely is in the neighborhood for Atrus, who's dangerous. And Locked came back and ran a new career best off a year layoff. And if he takes a natural step forward, he can win. After that, I don't think there's any other win candidates beside those six or seven out of 11. So, you know, it just becomes a question of your value and your evaluation of the pace scenario and you know, how you view a horse, let's say, like Buscador turning back, etc.
Steve, you don't need me on the show. Yeah. I mean, that was brilliant. I mean, it's you really hit on everything I think I would have said. The two that I'm most interested in are law professor and Senior Buscador, for the reasons you stated. And, you know, law professor just loves this racetrack and it has competitive numbers. And in the two of them, we're talking about horses that ran minus twos over the same strip, and both would give indications that they're circling back to that. Oh my gosh. At, you know, 15-1 type prices, that's too tantalizing. And, so there you go. Those are the two that I would have gotten down to, you know, if you put a gun to my head.
Excellent.
Well done.
All right. Yeah. And I pulled up, I just wanted to see, we still don't have, well, we got the pace anyway. The time form is calling for a fast pace, as I mentioned earlier this morning, which features Nelson Avenue and Repo Rocks, and then Pipeline.
What about Mulliken?
Mulliken, they've got tucked right behind in a garden trip.
Whew. I don't know. Wow. Okay. I wonder if they're going to be able to restrain him. Very, 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 very fast racehorse. But there you go. So, yeah, it's going to be one of my favorite races to watch. Certainly, maybe the year. I can't wait to watch this horse race.
You know, and one thing, Rosario rides back on Senior Buscador, and Joel's style fits him. Couldn't really take advantage in the Breeders' Cup the way they might have liked, and could only split the field. But the one turn style, the turn back, really does suit. And the way he ran in this last year, I think he's very much like a bar.
And visually, this is one of the great things I love about Thoroughgraph, is you can just look at the sheet and you can see him circling back.
Yeah,
you can
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So there's not only the sheer performance analysis, i.e. the minus two, but form cycles are so present. Just because a horse did something historically doesn't mean he's going to do it today or can't do it today. This gives you a strong indication in Senor Buscador's case that we can expect a good race from him. And so there you go.
Well, quick hit on the Demoiselle and Mohima. David made 4-5, and I get it. And from a sheet perspective, just coming off of the six, which came on the heels of the debut nine. So, yes, he posted these. He's got the fastest fig. But Fortuna Mia is right there, and you've got a second-time starter in Beauty Reigns that ran a 10 3/4. Our friend Will Schwartz's five-a-side ran an 8 in Breaking the Maiden, reacted a little bit when coming to New York to run the 10. But if he comes back toward the other direction, she's a player. Beauty Reigns probably, you know, is the mystery horse in here, and to me the most likely upsetter.
So I don't have the advantage of seeing the morning lines. I searched for him before the show.
I've got him. David Aragona's got him published. He puts them out typically, you know, a day or two ahead. So let me go back to David and get the. For this, because we got about a minute.
I only two horses, Steve, I need to know. Fortuna Mia and Bless the Broken.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Fortuna Mia is 15-1, and wow. Bless the Broken is 12-1, and Beauty Reigns is 9-2. Actually, she's the second choice, which takes some of the appeal out.
Okay, so quickly, in the minute, Fortuna Mia is attractive to me because she ran a great number last time in a buried past performance race. If you look at it on PPs, you go, eh. You look at it on in Thoroughgraph, it's the second fastest horse number in the race. And at 15-1, must be used. Bless the Broken, on the other hand, is more of a for those of you that have the sheets, look at the lower left, see the TGIs, the Thoroughgraph Index, and which measures the sire's progeny. And you'll see that from a sire perspective, Bless the Broken would figure to be much better going longer and longer. I mean, it's
nice.
Four point spread is 3.5 point spread is magnificent. So those are the two that I'm looking at to key with whatever comes down the pike. A mile, and this is a mile and eighth race.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, good point. Both good points.
Okay,
Jeff Franklin, thanks, Jeff.
Next week, Steve. Thanks.
Brian, turn that down a little. It's a little loud. Thank you. Better. Thanks. thanks to everybody. Jeff Franklin, Dave Hill, Sean Clancy, Caitlin E. Free, and Jason Milligan, Oaklawn tomorrow, Turfway carryover tonight. Gus has looked at it, and I'm going to write it up as well. So you'll have a hat full of opinions to consider. Twin Spires weekend preview tomorrow, a lot of aqueduct. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.